Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Dear viewers, as a general rule, if anything goes wrong on this program or any program on the TYT network, I want you to understand that Brett is very much in charge. And so if you have issues with it, lob them at him. And look, honestly, I don't want you to have to wait for that. So we decided we'll bring him on the show today. You don't have to wait until Friday. Brett's here on Tuesday. Brett, how's it going?
Yes, for those of you watching the Young Turks earlier yesterday when John was so gracefully on, so flawlessly. On. We mentioned that Senator Nina Turner would be on the show today, but due to an unforeseen issue, you have been rewarded with my presence.
Yeah.
My gorgeous.
That is one way to spin it.
John, this background, you know what it made happen? What? It created a situation in which I'm watching Deadwood now. And this Ron Swanson background.
Oh my God.
People don't know this, but Ron Swanson, the actor who plays him, is in Deadwood quite naked, getting shot very early on, trying to kill Wild Bill Hickok.
Okay.
So it was very strange to be in the multiple levels of whatever the hell's going on here. Because I try to fix my focus in real time.
It looks great.
And I'm too big, but at least you can look at these baby browns.
So I want to show solidarity with the audience. Sometimes I will test out a new podcast. I'll start a new podcast. And there's nothing more frustrating in a new podcast than 5 minutes of inane stuff that doesn't have to do with the podcast. And yet I do it constantly. And yes, Mark Bugs, Sophie is pissed. Anyway, everybody, this is the Damage Report. It's Tuesday. We've got news for you. Don't worry about that. We've got Brett for you. Don't worry about that either. So through the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we're gonna have what's left of our sanity, Brett and I. You can see that it's wearing thin. And along the way, we've got issues with Facebook and other social media sites. We've got COVID. Should we have done anything about it? I don't know. Some of the most powerful people in the country think maybe not. We've got a massive strike potentially on the horizon for here in LA. Oil speeches. We'll do oil speeches about oiled beaches that used to be Brett's stomping grounds. So we'll have that for you too. There's a lot coming up. If you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. Brett's like really frustrated me. This is a guy who does sonnets in his free time, but when I rhyme, it's a problem.
I didn't stomp that far south, but we'll see.
Oh, is that we'll also, you not well, consider that?
I'll probably on the screen, due to a weird compulsion I have, create a map of all of the different beaches in Los Angeles, starting with my stomping grounds and ending with Sophie's stomping grounds.
Oh, okay. Well, we're gonna find out a lot about the team, both on and behind the camera today on the show. And if you have any thoughts, concerns, criticisms, feel free to send them to us and we will be reading those during our breaks. But before all of that, Brett, are you ready to talk about social media?
Sure, why not? Let's have at it.
Okay, let's do that.
Today we saw Facebook get taken off the internet. I don't know why it went down, but I know that for more than 5 hours, Facebook wasn't used to deepen divides, destabilize democracies, and make young girls and women feel bad about their bodies.
I love taking the thing you're doing and making it topical. And that was a great example right there. So that was Frances Haugen, the whistleblower that is, as we speak, testifying before Congress about what she knows and what she can now leak with the documents that she took from Facebook about some of those abuses. But she weaved it into the fact that for the first time in as long as I can remember, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, these massive platforms, the biggest in the world, were all down for hours and hours yesterday. And it took a while for us to find out why. Facebook said late yesterday that the culprit was changes to its underlying internet infrastructure that coordinates the traffic between its data centers. To a regular person, that is the exact same thing as giving no explanation. But anyway, that interrupted communications and cascaded to other data centers, bringing our services to a halt. So that, Brett, produced a lot of fun on Twitter, like the last big remaining one, where we all talked about how we hated Facebook and Instagram and all of that. But of course, for a lot of people, these are not just social media sites. They are incredibly significant. In some countries like Myanmar and India, Facebook is basically what the internet is. More than 3.5 billion people around the world use it not just to communicate with friends and family, but to distribute political messaging, to organize and expand their businesses through advertising and outreach. And some during the outage talked about how much money they were losing. The owner of a startup in Ireland, HUH Clothing, said that they were losing thousands in sales. Even just missing out on 4 or 5 hours of sales could be the difference between making rent, paying their bills or not. So look, I took part in the jokes, but of course this is significant for a lot of people, especially outside of the US.
Yes, I will go out on a limb and say that the outage of Facebook during the in a time when Facebook is outed for a lot, the global outage of Facebook was disrupting to a lot of people's lives. I'm of the opinion that like a lot of people made their bed when it comes to relying too much on Facebook. That's one thing. And we all know that that's the truth because we all joke about it all the time. I think the issue with how, you know, it's when it comes to like one company running everything across the board, and then when you ask them, is this affecting your grasp on everybody's lives in a negative way? They're like, actually, we have separate control over different parts of these organizations. And because of that, it really is like having a bunch of different companies that don't really function as one. But really, that just sounds like it creates conveniences when people are testifying in hearings more than it creates any positive change in the world due to their restructuring, especially when their restructuring is used for other convenient explanations like why they disbanded their like civic review board.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And we did talk about that on the main show yesterday, but you should definitely look for that video. But yeah, I mean, look, Facebook going down by itself is big. You know, if you sell stuff on the marketplace, if you use it to organize insurrections, it being down is going to hamper your operations. That's totally true. But it was also the WhatsApp and the Instagram part, and WhatsApp especially, because in a lot of parts of the world, that's basically the phone is WhatsApp. That's how you communicate. And so like those were things that Facebook bought. At one point they were independent, they bought them and now run them. Is that good in hindsight? Like, why do they need to run those things? They're not integral to Facebook. It just now has produced this too big to fail thing. In what way is society better off? You know, and I understand that that's not what we make all of our considerations on. I'm just like lodging that as a topic of conversation. Is it better that these large corporations gobble up basically everything, making them vulnerable not only to outages, but also larger hacks because of the interrelation of their systems and all that? Like, I don't know, it doesn't seem like this is really serving much of anybody.
I think the big takeaway from this, the big takeaway from this going down the line, and I know you're just, the reason I lead with this is because like you just wanna have a decent conversation, but
that's all I've ever wanted.
The long tail of this is people are gonna be like, remember that outage? Me neither. And they're gonna go back to doing the thing that fills a hole in their life every day for hours and hours. And when they get their weekly iPhone screen time report, are just gonna be like, wow, I spent that many days on my phone, and wow, it's that larger percentage smaller than last week. Or bigger.
That's true. I think people will forget about it, and you're right. Like people do need to fill this hole. Some people fill it in different ways, like you know, pumpkin pie for breakfast or something like that. But everybody has a way that they fill it. I'm not calling anyone in particular out. Okay, you got to go back.
A la mode,
bro. Anyway, but yeah. And look, I think if I could twist your takeaway, my takeaway is Facebook is in the midst of 8 different scandals. The outage drew by far the most attention, and it is, in a long view, by far the least important of all of the different scandals. Whether it's something having to do with radicalization and QAnon and anti-vax misinformation, or if it's, you know, basically taking young girls' self-esteem and putting it through some sort of industrial processor. Like, there's a lot of bigger, more important things to this.
I don't know. I watched Adam Mosseri's dissertation on why they disbanded Instagram Kids before it was able to launch. And it's all these, like, I know a lot of these people, or at least like know that social circle of people who are like higher ups in that. And it's a mix of, it's people who mean well, and I don't think they mean poorly. Like, I don't know, I've never met Zuckerberg, but like everyone else I've met, and they are decent human beings. But then they generate these videos explaining themselves and these long explainers for their behaviors. And you're like, wow, there's so much that you just don't get. You don't get what it looks like, what it sounds like, all your commercials online, Amazon ending up making a video about like how cute it is to have a live sentry like patrolling your home at every turn and like having, being there for the express purpose of sending images to like somebody who's not the person being filmed. Like, yep. it ends up generating all of these things. And I remember the early days of the feed. Like when they launched it, the Facebook feed was novel in 2006. And after they launched it, everybody's like, what are you doing with my privacy? And then they wrote back, they're like, listen, you can opt in, you can opt out. Sorry, we didn't think of these things. We're just innovating. We're all people here. We tried to test it, but this is the biggest test of all. And, you know, your tolerance for that kind of invasiveness and undeniable instinct for compulsion and laziness that a lot of people have to just be like, it's just easier this way. Like that keeps taking hold. And then the other part of the conversation, did you have anything specifically about that before I talk about like how to regulate?
You feel free.
So yeah, it's just this regulation instinct is also the right one to have, and a cyclical one when it comes down to like how industries develop over time, right? So you will have day by day when Silicon Valley goes from like this, there's this thing called Google in a dorm and a thing called Facebook in a dorm, to when Facebook is big enough to buy WhatsApp in a dorm or this other thing in a dorm or like Instagram. Those acquisitions, those are things that become kind of a lifestyles of the rich and famous, aspirational, like very like early American dream type stuff, where you set out your own business and you build it and you either turn it into a giant industry leader or you sell it off to a bigger company. And a lot of people just take these cash out days. And why wouldn't they? Because they make money off it and then they can retire, or they fight and create another monolith, or they just fade into nothing, or an oligarchy kind of, you know, pillar of Silicon Valley, or they faded to obscurity. But then after that happens, because it will happen a lot of individual times, that's what it's all about. At a certain point, you're going to look around and be like, wow, it is too big. We need to break it up. That's happened with industries all over time, from transportation to other things, pre-digital telecommunication industries. Yeah. You just got to do it. You got to bite the bullet and you got to do it. The difference is when they argue against it, you're always seeing Facebook and Instagram saying, listen, these are different services. These are not competitive because Facebook does this way and Instagram does this way. The only way to counter that is sadly through Facebook's own inclination to copy everything everyone else does. Mm-hmm. So then they accidentally, by trying to mimic what the successful company does, get to a position where they're going to have more and more trouble arguing that they're all different companies and doing different things that are competitive. They're only competing with each other, with themselves.
Well, look, I think that you cover some of the arguments back and forth very well. The issue for me is like all of these scandals hit, and he's very powerful. Facebook's very powerful. I don't know what it would take to break through. It doesn't seem like to me that this is going to happen. You brought up the feed. I will very briefly say, because we got to get on this next subject. I think the fundamental issue with basically every single one of these platforms is the development and implementation of algorithms. When you went from, I signed on to this thing, I went and found the people that I know, I signed on to see their stuff when they post it, and instead the company says, No, I'm gonna tell you what you need to see, when you need to see it, and who else you might wanna see. I'm gonna try to break apart every neuron in your brain to figure out what will make you as addicted as possible. I think that that's caused a lot of issues. And look, the psychological issues, the radicalization, down to just, I hate Instagram because I can't see what people post until 2 days later because the algorithm won't let me. It is a company saying, we know you better than you know yourself, and then deploying an algorithm that produces that. So that's my issue with a lot of these, Facebook, and a lot of this ties into that.
Yeah, and it's gonna drive you nuts when I talk about this last bit about the algorithm. There is no like the algorithm, and when you put a new chunk or a new feature into the algorithm, from what I've heard from people, it's not like you can just take it out. So when they say the algorithm, what I've heard back from people at least YouTube is, yeah, we can't even, we try to do things that counteract it. So instead of having
I'm not talking about it as being like a box that has an algorithm in it. I mean, rather than having a chronological feed that I've signed on to these things, it is now a curated experience driven by some sort of rules that they have created. Other than, I said I want to follow this person, they post something, I see it now. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. And my point is, they're never gonna get rid of an algorithm because I'll say that they also, Google at least, and definitely I think Facebook, they've acquired a bunch of ad and psychographic prediction companies that are all about that. The entire ad industry has been trying to in an analog fashion, do what algorithms do digitally for years and years and years. There's no way they're gonna get rid of they just incorporated the thing that's supposed to tell you the next ad into the thing that's gonna tell you the next thing that's gonna make you excited. And I remember on this show 3 years ago, having someone from Vox on to say that it's not necessarily that there's an extremism problem, there's an extreme problem. And that just even if you're looking at recipes for new recipes for beef, you're gonna get into like raw food diet and like PETA attacks on random people who are trying to do things with animals. I don't know.
Yeah, or even the recipe itself is gonna have some sort of emotionally evocative thing tied to it because that's what gets the engagement rather than just the recipe. I agree, but that isn't crazy enough. We need more crazy, Brett, so let's go into that. As Facebook was going down, the conspiracy theories started to flourish. What does it actually mean? And it started off in some cases with satire, like this tweet from Captain Nasdaq, who said, breaking, Facebook, don't you love the tweets that start breaking? Breaking, Facebook has revealed that the recent outage of its apps and services was caused by a Chinese state-sponsored hacker group known as Huijianas,
I'm just pronouncing it because I know this guy.
I'm gonna say
Sean Huijianas.
Anyway, that was not serious. But tell that to the thousands of people that have now created a worldview based around that tweet and believe that it's totally true. And so some of it is satire. Some of it's more intentionally malicious. It is classic actual fake news. You take something that's happening, you lie about why it's happening. It's exciting in the way that we were just talking about, and so people run with it. And then there's other. I don't know if these are good faith attempts to explain what's going on by people who don't seem equipped to do so, but I came across this tweet actually live yesterday from Barstool Sports that said Facebook's master code reportedly deleted, which means Facebook and Instagram would be gone forever. And they had other tweets like that. This is not a temporary thing, it's gone forever. And I saw that and I thought, wait, is that possibly true? But thankfully it was posted by Barstool Sports. And so I thought, it's probably not true. But again, a lot of people really terrified because they saw this tweet from something with a blue check.
What would you have done if Facebook was down forever? Like, what would become of John?
I mean, it would affect our show because we post our videos on Facebook. But for me personally, I'm fine with it. I used to use Facebook Messenger to communicate with some people. I have one or two group things that still go through that, but I'm ready. Just pull the bandage off. I don't care.
I was like, oh my God, I felt so proud of myself because I didn't know. I mean, I was doing a lot of.
You would do? Or.
I didn't know it was happening.
Sure.
So I was like, oh, wow, cool.
Wait, but I mean, here's the issue with that. If you are so unaware of what's going on, Brett, then you might miss the beginning of the gears going into motion that will result in a new presidency. because many people said that the outage was part of the 10 days of darkness, a mythical event that is supposed to coincide with the return of former President Donald Trump. Because look, how are you gonna get through a bunch of conspiracy theories without whatever it is heralding Trump becoming president again? Literally everything does. Did you know, so I just saw this morning, Blade now has a release date. I think it's in September of next year, or they'd have you believe. I don't know, you can take literally anything and you can make it about Donald Trump becoming president again, but people seem to actually believe that. The fact that it's back up, one would hope, would get through to some of these QAnon people who had been preaching about the 10 days of darkness. Well, it turned out it wasn't that, but I doubt many will actually change their worldview accordingly.
I'm just sad because now there's no way that Facebook would get broken up. As proven, like this will come up in hearings down the line when Facebook says, listen, we would not have had, you just see Zuckerberg, we would not have been able to prove beyond a doubt in a A/B testing sort of scenario that Facebook is the, you know, unless there was a Facebook outage, because now we know that when Facebook goes down, people are still able to spread conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's it. Facebook went that's down. True. The conspiracy theories still spread. Thank you, Barstool. Thank you, QAnus.
That is true. I would argue, in theory, if PG&E's equipment wasn't constantly throwing sparks into Tinder, you'd theoretically still have forest fires. We get to be mad about the causes of the big ones too, though. Yeah, but I have no doubt that they will make that argument. They have made that argument. Even though clearly Facebook is sort of uniquely positioned to help radicalize people, well, radicalization existed before, so why should we care? It's frustrating.
Yeah, anyway. I loved it. I saw that one too, where it's like Facebook's gone forever. And I was thinking, huh, I just missed my photos.
Yeah, I have some photos on there. That's definitely true. I was a little bit scared, and coming out of this experience, I will trust Barstool Sports slightly less for analysis of world-shaking events. Anyway, by the way, before we go to our first break, I do want to let you know we had a discussion yesterday on the show about the protest of Kyrsten Sinema, and on the Young Turks, Cenk and I actually disagreed a bit about it. And so I really want to know what you all think. So we put together a poll. It's at tyt.com/polls/cinema-protest, but you can just go to tyt.com/polls, you'll see it. Do you support the bathroom protest of Kyrsten Sinema? You can vote yes if you have the F offering, or no if you have the sassy little thumbs down there. And we will reveal this at the end of the show. And at that point, Brett, I'm curious to figure out or to find out what you think. So we'll have that at the end of the show. Everyone's got to stick around. No, don't reveal it.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'm glad I was listening to you. I just want to say that Kyrsten Sinema, by and large, is a giant dangly turquoise earring that you can buy at like a Ramada gift shop or in the airport at Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Like where you can buy like, ICANN has, but the AZ is like an Arizona cheeseburger t-shirt. It's mm-hmm. that. And it's then ICANN next to it is Chardonnay. A dangly earring that is exactly Kyrsten Sinema. And it doesn't shape like it, but you look at this dangly turquoise, gaudy, like culturally appropriative, non-indigenous really earring sold by some rando at a gift shop. And you're like, Senator Sinema, while I have you, that's who she is.
We're gonna fact check that, but first, this break. Okay, Brett, we've gone this long without talking about COVID. It's a new record on the show. Oh my God, what is going on with my crew? Anyway.
I believe it's known as a dab off.
I saw dabbing going on out of the corner of my eye. I felt like I was hanging out with Elon Musk again. Anyway, we're gonna talk about, it's still going on. You guys can't see it, but not only in this camera, but in this camera. Okay, let's talk about something like the news. Senator Ron Johnson was on Tucker Carlson's program to talk about Dr. Fauci, so you know it's gonna be great. And here is what Ron Johnson had to say about the leadership against COVID currently serving the US.
The question you have to ask about Tony Fauci, and quite honestly, the other people in our healthcare agencies, is have their policy prescriptions, have they worked? We have more than 700,000 people dead now. We spent trillions of dollars. The human toll, the economic devastation. We're at each other's throats now with these divisive mandates that are going to destroy our healthcare system, destroy our military readiness. Their policy prescriptions have been a miserable failure. And the biggest blunder of all, they ignored early treatment.
Okay, so I want to thank the senator for one thing. Actually acknowledged that over 700,000 people have died. In fact, it's 703,000 that have actually been like confirmed. We know that that's an underestimate, whether it's 10%, 20%, 30%, we don't know. But Brett, what we had there was Senator Ron Johnson saying, look, a lot of people have died. Now we must come up with a way to explain how that could have happened. Is it that we didn't do enough? That makes me briefly uncomfortable. Perhaps it's because we did anything. And that idea was so mind-shattering, so world-changing, that this, I want to focus on Tucker Carlson's reaction in real time to Ron Johnson saying that.
We have more than 700,000 people dead now. We spent trillions.
Laughed and pointed out it being a good point. Now everything he does is, you know, like it's not genuine or whatever, Brett. But he really did like that line of thought, that perhaps we shouldn't have done the things that we did.
What did you do? First of all, what did he do? This is the, it's so messed up. It is hilarious to watch people contort their message to whatever is convenient for them from a policy perspective, convenient for them from a political perspective, not only in how they can message on TV, but what they now need to say. So that is so in the face of history, in the face of reality, that it appeases an audience that has even turned on Donald Trump when he mentions anything about vaccines. It is so easy for, he basically is the guy in the back who is drunk, who needs a designated driver saying like, I can take a corner faster. That's what he's doing. You're a worse bag, you're in the wheel. Like that's what he's trying to do. Everything, when anyone thinks about how best to handle a deadly disease, which he has already admitted in his own logic is wildly deadly. For you to get to a point as a politician who is not a moron, where the best course of action according to your calculation, and you may be right politically, is to say that the best thing to do in handling a deadly disease is nothing. Like, it is this weird phenomenon of Republican politicians where if you ask them what to do, and there's plenty of people with plenty of political theory behind them who have genuine responses to this, but it's hilarious when you hear it. It's like, well, when I become president as a Republican, I'm gonna do nothing. I'm going to get rid of this part of my responsibilities, this part of my responsibilities. Everyone's on their own.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. It is so baffling.
Yeah. To me, maybe you disagree. To me, like they look in real time all along the way, in varying ways, they said, let's not do anything. That to me is worse because it's prescriptive. It is potentially influencing a world that could be better than it will be if we listen to them. So it's substantively worse what they've already done. But it seems it's more maddening what we just saw. It's one thing to be like, let's not do anything. But when you acknowledge that it was a failure to say we shouldn't have done what we did do, I think that that is more maddening to me, especially when, like, it's what he just said, the fact that we shouldn't have done what we did, we shouldn't have listened to Fauci despite the 700,000 deaths, that is bad enough. But do you remember what Trump said like a week and a half ago? He said, I did the opposite of whatever Fauci said. He said, Fauci gave me advice, I didn't listen to him, I did the opposite. But Ron Johnson doesn't have that thrown back in his face. So should we have not done the stuff that Trump wanted? Because apparently Trump never listened to Fauci. He did his own thing. But you're saying we shouldn't have even done that. But you also say that it was a failure, even though Trump is saying he was in charge and he got what he wanted. The whole thing is just maddening. And really fast, before we comment more, that was Ron Johnson saying that. And then we showed that Tucker liked it. Tucker also effectively echoed it, as you'll see here.
I think you make a series of great points, but the first one is just kind of indelible. You've had almost 700,000 people die. Is there any evidence that any of these measures, which really have reshaped the country completely, have saved a huge number of lives? I mean, if we had just ignored it, would many more than 700,000 have died? Sincere question.
One of my favorite, in a dark way, Tuckerisms is the sincere question. I'm being honest here. I'm being real. No, you're not. Literally nothing. But that was an exercise thing. He deploys that. He's not being honest. Except a little bit in his motivations there. That's true. He's saying, is there any evidence that anything we did save lives? He was very broad and general. So what did we do? We did lockdowns. We encouraged masks. We deployed treatments. We set up triage units. We developed vaccines. We deployed vaccines. Who is he to know whether any of that saved a single life? He doesn't know, and he doesn't have time to bring on guests to ask because he's filling his time with people like Ron Johnson.
I mean, okay, so the first part of it is Tucker saying serious question. In a court of law, when he tries to make this defense that everything's entertaining and nothing really is him reporting and he doesn't mean anything, when that's his legal defense. When he is that his safety word? Serious question. Everything else is just this weird, kinky, like life and death choke sex with America. Is that what's happening? Because there is a real, real chance that more people will die. He's asking the question, do you think that medicine helps?
Yeah. He doesn't know. Open question. Hey, here's the thing.
And it just proves that his whole show is a bedtime story, sometimes scary, sometimes soothing, to tell all the good little conservatives to stay asleep, not go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will simply add on that.
I'm gonna sneeze.
He presents it as a hypothetical. It's a nonsensical, moronic, baby brained hypothetical because we know that medicine helps with sickness. But it's also not purely a hypothetical. It doesn't need to be. So when COVID first hit, we did stuff, right? You remember, we're still doing some of it. We're not together. So we did that stuff. And then we dialed it back. What happened? I don't know. You remember how November went? You remember how December and January went? It was pretty bad. And then we started doing stuff again because of how bad it was. And what happened? Did it get better? Yeah, it got better. And then we lightened up. What happened? These are not hypotheticals. We've been through multiple cycles of this already. But anyway, I do want to play just one more bit of video because Ron Johnson, look, we're going to be sort of co-opting what he says here. But he does make a good point, if not the point that he intends to make.
These people will never admit they were wrong, and they've got the power to make sure that they're never proven wrong. There's something very sinister going on here, Tucker, and it has cost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people their lives.
If only he were actually identifying what Fox and the Republican Party have done, because he's exactly right. They'll never admit that they're wrong, and it has cost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of lives because of the misinformation, and it's incredibly sinister. On the one side, you have a Republican politician, a senator. On the other, you have the most watched face in conservative media, and they have combined forces over a year and a half to convince you not to do anything, and they really tried to undermine the effort in every way that they could, and they largely succeeded. And a lot of people died as a result of it. And rather than ever acknowledge that, or more importantly, allow their audiences to ever acknowledge that, they are now saying, no, it wasn't us or you. You didn't cause this. It was the people who took it seriously, the people who wore masks. They were the true villains all along.
Yeah. And so many of their arguments along the way are contradictory. The idea that like certain pharmaceutical companies are good and other pharmaceutical companies are bad, while still saying pharmaceutical companies are bad, so I shouldn't take this vaccine. Now please take ivermectin. All the way to his stupid argument that like we're gonna make ourselves less militarily ready because we're mandating vaccines among soldiers. We already do that and have since literally George Washington, when it was way more likely that you were gonna die from the vaccine. So that doesn't make sense. Lindsey Graham, we got to watch this, is going to happen later on TYT today, but Lindsey Graham, while talking to Trump people, there's video of him just in so much pain trying to win back the audience. And his argument is, I think you should take the vaccine, and they boo him and yep. boo him. And he says, I don't think it's necessarily constitutional to have vaccine mandates. Dudes, the entire concept that it is bad that you're putting military according to your logic, you're putting military lives at risk. That's what the military is about, first of all.
Yeah.
They're putting their lives at risk. The question is needfully or needlessly. And when this is a proven vaccine that at least doesn't hurt you, and definitely at this point shows that 96% of the people in the hospital from this are unvaccinated, it mm-hmm. seems like the person needlessly putting lives at risk is the Republican politicians who suck a bunch of farts.
Got me back at the end there. Okay, really fast. I do want to make sure that we talk about this. This is our COVID block. So why don't we launch on this last topic? I put a note in the thing. Getting COVID, dying from COVID, these are serious concerns, but they're not the only concerns. Many people, literally millions of Americans, have already had COVID, have survived it, but that does not mean that they won't suffer as a result of it. And so you might notice every once in a while, it's never the lead news, renewed concerns about long COVID, the symptoms that you can experience after surviving a bout with COVID-19. I just recently noticed yesterday news of long COVID symptoms may be caused by microclots. These are blood clots that contain inflammatory molecules. That's the extent of my knowledge on it, and God only knows if that's true, but it does sound horrifying. Anyway, the research into long COVID, how we might mitigate it, is continuing, but I want to let you know at least how big of a problem it actually is. And so there's new research coming out all the time. We have a big study to talk about right now. Among 270,000 people recovering from COVID-19 that researchers studied, 37% still had at least one symptom 3 to 6 months later. This is as a result of research done by Oxford University and the National Institute for Health Research in a study published earlier today. So 37%. And these symptoms are broad. They can encompass things like trouble breathing, abdominal issues, fatigue, pain, anxiety, and depression. And so some of those are sort of purely physical. And you've probably heard about people who have, you know, trouble breathing, but also trouble smelling after a bout with COVID. But then there's also the psychological issues. So they talk about brain fog, a phenomenon characterized by word finding difficulties or poor concentration. Cognitive symptoms were seen in about 8% of patients that were more common among the elderly, populations that already suffer at higher rates from these sorts of difficulties exacerbated by an experience with COVID. And so this is something that we are going to have to grapple with and hopefully mitigate, both in terms of treatments, but also in terms of funding. Because sure, the vaccine might be free, and maybe at least early on tests were subsidized. But if you had a bout with COVID, if you are dealing with these problems and need help, palliative care and things like that for months or years afterward, that's gonna cost a lot of money. And the government's willingness to provide aid seems to have dried up 6 months ago. Activists are pushing for renewed aid from the federal government or from states. But as of right now, it doesn't seem that there's much of an appetite amongst the wealthy, the rich, the powerful to do that. But Brett, what are your thoughts about long COVID?
My thoughts about long COVID are it is super duper scary, and I try not to think about it. And the way that I carve out that luxury for myself is to not interact with human beings or animals or the outside world as much as possible. I went to a football game recently, and it was absolutely mortifying and terrifying. But in those moments when you're outside and there weren't a lot of people at the game, can thank goodness there weren't, but you just get the feel. It's terrifying. And that is just one of the many reasons that I take the precautions that I do. And when pressed, and when I have the opportunity, I will encourage people to take those same precautions. And if they're not taking those precautions, I sit down and I just stew in it. And then I have to make a decision whether I'm gonna give them the satisfaction of confronting them over it. And sometimes I do, because I can't control
myself. You do like confronting. You do. You and your wife have that in common. You like confrontation. Yeah, well, look, I'm scared too. A different study out of Wuhan found 45% had at least one symptom a year after being released from the hospital. Again, fatigue, chest tightness, sweating, anxiety, muscle pain. That's just devastating. And one other aspect of this that we do need to think about beyond just adults suffering with this, there have now been more than 5.7 million children that have tested positive for the coronavirus, which I just like, we're just gonna breeze by and talk about other news later. But like, if you had found out on day one of the pandemic, like, oh God, how bad is it gonna be? Oh, I don't know, 6 million kids alone will have COVID would be pretty eye opening there. Particularly when we heard for months and months from people in media that, yeah, you don't have to worry about it, it's not a big deal with kids. Well, except for the 6 million, I suppose. And while long COVID symptoms appear to be rarer in kids, they do still exist. And there's a population of billions for them to exist in, causing problems like fatigue, headaches, muscle pain, as well as difficulty concentrating and other things that complicate daily activities and interfere with learning. Now that is frustrating if you experience those sort of cognitive issues, the brain fog as an adult. As a kid though, that is the time that you're in school. Like, you don't, like, if you have issues, those are gonna follow you for the rest of your life potentially. Even if you physically recover, it potentially damaged a period when you were learning crucial skills. So the long-term effects are gonna be significant, and they're gonna be far broader than just shortness of breath. There's gonna be social implications as well. Any final thoughts?
Nope.
Okay, well, with that, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, LA might soon be the site of an absolutely massive strike. We're gonna be breaking it down after this. Anyway, yes, if we could get that poll on Twitch, let's see, should there be two Bretts? But if it says no, that's really mean, so everybody be nice. Anyway, people are asking, by the way, about Anna Kasparian's debate with, I'm blanking on his name, I almost called him Brett Shapiro. Anyway.
Ben Shapiro, I get it.
Brett Shapiro, can they watch that? Were we able to
today
get-
Today on the show, first hour, or depending on if we get to it in the first hour, but definitely in bonus episode if we don't get to it. Cenk has been watching and pulling out. Basically what happened was hilarious. They send out like to select members of the media a live feed of it. And so there were a bunch of, this is how depraved it is. There are a bunch of conservatives who want to crawl up Ben Shapiro's drap. They were basically just pulling out of context clips and tweeting them to say, Shapiro destroyed Kasparian, which is just, it's so pathetic and so sad when you think of
it. But it's also, it's just, it doesn't matter what's said. They're gonna do that. That's my fundamental issue. And by the way, I've been talking about how much I hate these debates for a long time because the context makes them as of little use as they can be. It's not to say that they're of no use. And I might do one at some point, but that will, like, Anna could have destroyed him with logic, like literally destroyed him. He could have Thanos, but it wouldn't matter. They're still gonna send around their clips. So it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
Yep.
But anyway, apparently they will have that. I am being reminded with a lot of exclamation points that it's 10:50. Oh, I know what time it is, but thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, you're saying we should hurry up. Oh, okay. Well, then in that case, let's go straight into this story.
You saw that there's a note that I was highlighting. Sophie was highlighting. Just go straight into it. There's
fine,
no B-roll.
I will. Block. Just focus. Just I apologize. I thought they were referring to something else. Again, if there's any issues with this show or any show on the network, talk to Brett. Anyway, okay, we've been waiting to find out, especially here in LA, is there going to be a massive strike of the crews that work on like basically everything that goes on in terms of TV and film production? And we are not there yet, but it has now been authorized. Negotiations continue, but you should know that nearly 90% of IATSE's union membership from 36 different local union branches cast electronic ballots on this question. Each local approved the measure with at least 96%. And so if you're wondering, well, what do the actual workers think? It really couldn't be much clearer than it was. There was massive engagement on the question and it was massively popular. Now again, there is still going to be negotiations, it might or might not actually happen, but this was a major obstacle in the way of it, potentially, if it had been voted down. And so let's see, Union President Matthew Loeb can now call for a work stoppage, though the group is returning to the bargaining table before actually pulling the trigger on that. This union alone represents more than 60,000 set builders, costume designers, video engineers, and other behind the scenes workers. The union president said the members have spoken loud and clear. This vote is about the quality of life, as well as the health and safety of those who work in the film and television industry. Our people have basic human needs like time for meal breaks, adequate sleep, and a weekend. For those at the bottom of the pay scale, they deserve nothing less than a living wage. And multiple issues are mentioned there, but of course, money is a big one, especially considering what the world and LA has been like for the past year with the pandemic, with the economic toll of that. But these are not new problems. Salaries for off-camera personnel have not grown commensurate with those of actors and writers, according to workers, who contend that the rush to produce new programs has deprived them of time with their families, sleep, and even bathroom breaks. And a lot of the people involved in the union, regular workers, have been talking about their experiences. You can find these things on YouTube as well as TikTok. There are great Instagram accounts that compile these sorts of things. But there's concerns about literally like crashing their cars because they're going home so late that they don't have time. They haven't slept. They're about to fall asleep in their cars. Like, these are serious concerns. And this vote, whether it results in a work stoppage or not, is at least a strong sign to the industry that they mean what they're saying and they want the compensation they feel that they deserve. Yeah. Brett, what are your thoughts?
There are these kinds of unions run the town in terms of by the town I mean like Hollywood itself, the people in it make these productions possible. And you know, my great grandfather Johnny Lee was a grip back in the day, like
really?
All the way. Yeah, way back in the day, like, you know, these are the kinds of things that, you know, protect workers against the instincts of those who at every turn have tried to kind of get around it. And what's very frustrating to me is when you see these giant corporations that have used traditionally, there's like these moments, some guy took me aside like a while back when I was on a Sony lot. And he was like, you know, the reason that and this might be an exaggeration, who knows, but like the reason that shows are digital now is because that was a way to get around a union issue. Mm-hmm. If it was on film, there was like a film shortage, sure, and all this stuff, and people stood in solidarity of that. And then they moved to digital because they were like, well, technically, you're not a filmmaker if you're on a digital cassette tape. And that same thing has extended to digital distribution. Yeah. And these are the kinds of things that happen and frequently yield, yes, weird moments like Sex in the City season 6A and 6B, but very tangible gains for those who have been taken advantage of incrementally, yeah, bit by bit over the years. And then suddenly they look around and say like, I'm not getting paid for digital. Yeah. And then especially in a time when there's a pandemic and there's definitely more leverage that they have because Hollywood is so far behind in production.
Yeah.
And these folks have had to do without for so long. It is now a very difficult time and a very pivotal time. And I think both sides have kind of gauged the situation and said like, yes, it is that time to fight a little harder. And so that's kind of what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's what even more pressure will do. And that is what has happened to basically everyone, but this industry is not immune during this time. Economic concerns are even worse. By the way, someone had asked, I mentioned the union, I didn't say what it stood for. It's the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. And personally, I would like to see this as a time for reckoning, like that, obviously, you know, lifeblood of basically all of these productions, definitely important too. But like we've heard for years about how abused animation studios are and things like that. Stunt workers, there's a lot of concerns that have just sort of been ignored for literally decades in this industry. I would love to see a broader reckoning too. There's a lot of support being shown obviously by celebrities for this. I'll also point out though, like how much time do we have? We have a little time, we have a minute. Okay, very briefly. So I'd been following Scarlett Johansson, felt like she had been lied to basically by Marvel. And that, look, the fact that, you know, leading actresses are not valued by their industries is a significant issue. I saw the resolution of that was that she ended up getting a $40 million settlement, which is certainly great for her. But when I saw that, I thought, man, there's a lot of people that work on those movies. And that is a lot of additional money. Well, not to say that it's not earned, it did very well and everything. But when I saw it, I thought, man, the heads of these movies sure can make a lot of money.
But anyway, there, a lot of those dynamics hold true. Like this, that was about where the movie premiered and having line items in her contract saying films, you know, theatrical premiere. What does that mean?
It's like the thing you said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Well, we're going to be seeing. The negotiations are ongoing, but there could be a massive stoppage. I mean, you still constantly hear about what happened after the writer's strike. Like this would be even more significant. You know, basically everything would shut down. And we'll see. In any event, thank you for a linear audience. If you're watching on YouTube and Twitch, we do have a lot more coming. So we're gonna take a short break, but stick around. We'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.